From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm the shirt that doesn't cling too tight. I'm billowy, Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. We made it. It's the end of the year. We survived despite the threats of nuclear war and civil war and infinity war. We did it. The year is over.
Peter, we have an update. The year is actually not over. It's only August.
Oh, well, that would explain why my ski vacation is going so poorly. Anyway, we already scheduled the week off, so there's still time to enjoy some wonderful moments from some of our recent shows.
Speaking of skiing, earlier this year, before the Winter Olympics in South Korea, Paula Poundstone let us know her opinion of that sport.
David, here is your last quote.
No flag for you.
That was USA Today summing up the International Olympic Committee's response to what country that was banned from the Winter Olympics for doping?
Russia,
yes! Russia, so Russia has been banned. So everybody who wished on a monkey's paw for Russia to get punished for cheating this year, you should have been more specific. The Russian national team has been completely banned from the upcoming Winter Olympics for doping, which means no medals for them in sports they dominate, like biathlon, cross-country skiing, and backknee.
Well, isn't the Korean Peninsula expected to explode in a large mushroom cloud?
Yeah, that's what they said. You know, we don't know what's going on in North Korea. The Olympics are in South Korea this upcoming winter. And
they're
so
very
maybe
close together.
They are. They're
one's a little north of the
one's a little south,
yeah. Glad I don't cross-country ski.
No, but one in the U.S. really does either.
Yeah.
You know, no one on earth does. No, that's what snowmobiles are for.
The Nordic countries kick our asses so badly. I remember watching, you know, by the way, cross-country skiing is not really a spectator sport either.
No.
It's very hard for it to be covered. I mean, it's boring as hell to look at. And they go by.
Yeah. I mean, at least with curling.
Yeah, you can at least continue to watch.
Yeah.
But I remember I did happen to watch some the last Winter Olympics, and, you know, all the Nordic women because that's how they go get their bread and stuff, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, but,
reindeer,
you know,
steaks.
The U.S. women were, like, way back. They were texting each other. They weren't.
After the Olympics, we had a chance to talk to one of our gold medalists, Olympic champion cross-country skier Jesse Diggins, who, yes, had heard what Paula had to say.
Wow, thank you.
So first of all, congratulations. How does it feel to be America's sweetheart?
Oh, gosh. I don't know about the sweetheart part, but it feels so cool to get to share this sport because previously most people didn't know what cross-country skiing was. And now they do, and it's so awesome.
Yeah, some people, in fact, said rather insulting things about it, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I know. Some people didn't quite know enough about cross-country skiing, but now they're our biggest fan, and that is so cool. Thank
you,
Paula.
So, Jesse, you'll be glad to know that I got a rasher from people complaining that, you know, what did I know and how stupid I was. And they were particularly defending you guys in particular. They were like, these girls work so hard, they would say.
So you guys on the cross-country team, you heard Paula's little insult?
Actually, we were in the car on the way from Switzerland to Italy.
Oh, no.
And one of my teammates just burst out laughing. She had her headphones on, and she goes, you guys, you have to listen to this.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I got to tell you, our fan base may be small, but wow, they're feisty.
Oh, yeah. They are.
No, yeah. they were feisty. A lot of them wanted bad things to happen to me.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And were you guys?
Well, to set the record straight, you're welcome to come join us skiing anytime you want. I will even let you borrow my skis.
Oh,
whoa.
Wow.
I think that would be a bad thing happening to her.
I know. I could sure use a training. Next year, I can put wooden slats on my feet.
Yeah, and even hold some sticks in your hands.
What I want to know is when you guys towed the line at the sprint relays in Pyongyang, did you say to yourselves, take this, Paula Poundstone?
I'm sorry. My last thought before the start was not of you, Paula.
Maybe oh, that's all right.
So let's go back a little bit. You grew up in Afton, Minnesota, which is a small town east of the Twin Cities. And how did you find your way into cross-country skiing, which, as we have determined, is not perhaps the most popular winter sport in America?
Yeah, my parents were super into it. And so from when I was a baby, they would put me in their backpack and go on their ski dates every weekend. And so I grew up, you know, pulling on my dad's hair, telling him to mush like he was a sled dog or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure he got a great workout.
Right. It's so lucky that your parents weren't into the luge.
I have to say, it is, of course, a cliche that these sports look easy. You look at speed skating. Oh, look, they're just skating along. You look at skiing. Oh, you just go down the hill. Cross-country skiing looks incredibly hard. Because
but you know, the funny thing is everyone can do it at entry level. Yes, Paula, even you, despite your complaints. But I think the cool thing is, yeah, it's kind of like running a marathon. Maybe not everyone's going to go out and crush a marathon, but everyone can run. And skiing is the same thing. Everyone can try it. Everyone can go skiing. And maybe you don't want to punish yourself as much as we do. I understand. It's okay. So, but everyone should get out and try it.
You got to carry the flag at the closing ceremony, which was awesome. You looked like you were having a tremendous amount of fun at that closing ceremony.
Oh, man. I really was. I was trying not to skip too much. I was just so excited. I was like, I've got to prance right in there.
Was the flag heavy?
It was, actually. I didn't realize we were going to be waving the flag for like 20 minutes. So oh, no. I should have paced myself.
Right.
God. If only you had experience doing some sort of endurance sport.
Yeah, it would have been
physically taxing.
You could have flipped in your back and waved it with your powerful legs, I guess. So all during the Olympics, we saw these commercials based around you, which showed the town of Afton, Minnesota, getting up in the middle of the night to watch you compete.
Yeah, you know, the cool thing about that is that commercial was based off of that event because it actually happened. Back in Sochi, the Choku Cafe opened their doors at 3 a.m. They were handing out coffee, and all the high schoolers lined up in their sleeping bags on the floor, and they projected the relay race, and the whole town showed up to watch it, and it was the coolest thing. I mean, I saw the photo, and I, like, burst into tears.
Aww,
it was so moving
really
to
cool.
see everyone.
Did they actually film it in Afton, Minnesota?
They did. They filmed it in the actual cafe.
How awesome. And now, 4 years ago, of course, in Sochi, you didn't do as well as you did this year, of course. And so, I mean, after everybody got up in the middle of the night to watch you, were they like, you better win this time, Jesse?
Yeah, if we're brewing coffee at 3 a.m., you better make it worth it.
Well, you did. Well, Jesse Diggins, we are delighted to talk to you. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Hey, I rolled a hundo. Beer me.
So, you clearly know how to ski, but do you know how to ski ball?
And
we're going to ask you three questions about the classic arcade game, Ski Ball. Answer two of them correctly, and you win a prize for one of our listeners, the voice of anyone they like from this show on their voicemail. Bill, who is Jesse playing for?
Ryan Carver of Long Beach, California.
All right. First question about Ski Ball. The game was invented back in 1908 by one Joseph Simpson. Like a lot of inventors, he had some failures before hitting on the idea that would make him successful, including which of these? A, the first ever car for fancy people, called the Model V. B, a kind of candy, but it's good for you. Or C, a standing bed for very small apartments.
Wow, I can't imagine why any of these would have been a failed idea. I'm going to go with the standing bed.
No, it was the candy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
He tried to invent a candy as a health food, but couldn't quite get it right, sadly. He just had to wait 100 years for granola bars. All right. You still have two chances. There has been a ski ball revival recently pushed by a Brooklyn-based league. It's spread all over the country. They've popularized the game with young people of all kinds. But this league had a setback when they were suddenly sued by whom? A, a player who tried to put a ball in his mouth and then could not get it out. B, a champion player from San Francisco who said, based on his scores, he deserved more than 1,000 Kewpie dolls and or 1 million Chinese finger traps. Or C, the Ski Ball Company.
Ooh, I guess the Ski Ball Company might make sense.
That's right. It was the Ski Ball Company. They were justifiably upset that their product had once again become popular. So They sued the people who did that for copyright infringement. All right, you have one more chance. If you get this right, you'll win. Skee-ball success, back when it started in the arcades of early 20th century America, inspired a lot of knockoffs. Which of these was a real fake skee-ball you could have found in a disreputable arcade? A, Bolette, B, Hurdle Hop, or C, Pamco Tango?
Oh, wow. Those are amazing names. Hurdle Hop?
You're going to guess Hurdle Hop?
What was the name of the first one again?
It was Bolette, Hurdle Hop, or Pamco Tango.
I'm changing it to Bolette.
You're going to go for Bolette?
Cute.
Is that your choice?
Yeah.
You're right.
It is the time.
You're right. In fact, all of them were in fact names for skee ball ripoffs. You could also have played bowl a game, bally roll, or chime ball. Bill, how did Jesse Diggins do in our quiz?
Jesse won another gold medal. You can hang it up, Jesse. Thank you.
Gotta ask, what's more thrilling, the Olympic gold medal or winning this?
Well, you know, I think what's awesome about this is you totally set me up for success with three correct answers, and I managed to make myself look dumb by changing my answers.
Jesse Diggins is a proud member of the U.S. ski and snowboard team. She won a gold medal for cross-country skiing at the 2018 Olympics in South Korea. Jesse Diggins, congratulations, and thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jesse. Congratulations.
When we come back, we're joined by America's mayor, if you assume South Bend, Indiana, is America, and a real live Nobel Prize winner. We'll be back in a minute with more Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message comes from Wix.com, a web platform for creating your own professional website. With Wix, whether it's your first time creating a website or you're a longtime pro, you can do it yourself. Choose from hundreds of stunning templates or start from scratch with drag-and-drop technology and powerful web features. Join over 125 million people already using Wix to create their own websites. Go to Wix.com to create yours today. So what will you create?
Hey, this is Stretch Armstrong.
And this is Bobby DeGarcia, the hosts of What's Good.
We're back with a brand new season.
We've got Erykah Badu, Lenny Kravitz, Black Thought, and more.
You'll hear B-side stories from A-list guests. Subscribe now.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. We have decided that enough has happened this year, and we are just done with it. No more news.
And until they find out where we're hiding and drag us back to work, we thought we'd enjoy some things from our recent past.
In February, we all went down the road to South Bend, Indiana, which has become famous for its mayor, Pete Buttigieg, a former Army officer and Rhodes Scholar.
But he used to be known by a different name, the Boy Mayor. And Peter asked him why.
You were elected mayor at the age of 27, which made you the youngest mayor of a city above 100,000 people in the country.
Yeah, at the time. Yeah, I was 29. So,
29, excuse me.
Youngest mayor. Of course, that's a record that you only stand to lose.
So, right, exactly.
I held it for a time, and then somebody sent me a message on Twitter saying, hey, you can't keep calling yourself the youngest mayor of a city under 100,000. I've got you beat.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. Was there a skepticism? Like, you're 29 years old. What the hell do you know about being a mayor?
Yeah, sometimes door to door, somebody would say, you know, I got underwear older than you or something like that.
You're known as a South Bend booster, right?
Oh,
we
yeah.
know this. Yeah.
No, absolutely. It's the best city in the, maybe not the biggest, maybe not the oldest, but certainly the best city in the country.
Whoa. All right. You didn't just say it's a nice city. You didn't say it's a nice place to live. You said it's the best city in the country, so prove it. Go. Tell me why.
Oh, come on. That is pandering.
You can't just gesture to the people. That's not leadership. That's butt kissing. Come on.
Wow, that is some quality pandering. So how old are you now? Out of curiosity.
Old enough, I got to think about it for a second. I'm 36.
36, wow. Well,
but I'm 35, and I haven't done anything.
Yeah. Just done nothing.
My parents aren't here, but I feel like they felt a little burn right now.
Right then.
Also, all the way in New York, the second greatest city in the world.
I love that. Is it... You were headed for, maybe in finance or something like that with your background. Did your friends say, I'm going back to South Bend, I'm going to run for mayor? Did they think you were crazy?
Yeah, when I moved home, I remember I was getting a beer with some folks, and I said I was moving home to South Bend. They were like, oh, do you have a relative who's ill? No, mom and dad are great. I just want to go home. It's a great city, and I want to live there. It's a community that really, you get out of it what you put into it.
Right. What does that mean? Wait a minute, hold on. You're describing the lifestyle or the sewer system? I have no... What?
Are you aware that we have the smartest sewer system in the world?
No!
I
wasn't aware,
Mayor.
That's
a fact. We have the most densely censored network of sewers anywhere in the world. Smart water technology is actually
But by a big censored,
deal.
You don't mean... Don't say that. You mean that it is... How dare you! You mean sensors.
Yeah, we have these Wi-Fi-enabled sensors all through the system. They let us manage the flow, route things where it's supposed to go, mitigates the flows going into the river. If you're involved in wastewater,
how
it's a big
specific
deal.
Is it? Is it like, oh... It's like, oh, God, the Harrises had burrito night again. I got to talk to you about your ambitions. You're a rising star in the Democratic Party. You ran for Democratic chair earlier last year. So, what are your plans for, say, 2020?
I have the best job in the world, and just try to keep my head down, do a good job, and
yeah.
I got plenty to keep me busy.
Right, things are going fantastically well in South Bend. Does it worry you that nobody with a funny name like yours could ever get elected president?
Around here, it's actually an asset. You know, this is a community. A lot of East European settlement here in South Bend. We got one guy, Shebish is his name. He ran for office recently. Not one vowel in his entire name.
Really?
I'm not kidding. There's a lot of Y's and S's and Z's.
All right.
No vowels.
Okay. Well, Mayor Pete, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling.
Welcome to North Bend, stranger.
So as we know, you were the biggest booster of South Bend, but what do you know about the town's arch nemesis, North Bend, Washington? Answer these three questions and you will not only win our prize for a listener, you'll also get to wipe the town of North Bend off the map.
Wow.
Bringing the great war of the Bends to a close. Bill, who is Mayor Pete playing for?
Colin Pickens of South Bend, Indiana.
All right. First question. In 2013, the North Bend Fire Department made the news when they did which of these? A, attempted to rescue a cat stranded in a tree, but the cat turned out to be a rabid raccoon and 8 firefighters had to get vaccinated. B, a reporter discovered that the station's beloved Dalmatian was just a white greyhound with a skin condition. Or C, they accidentally pumped jet fuel instead of water onto a training fire, causing a gigantic fireball.
You know, we have an outstanding fire training center here in South Bend. And I can see how... I mean, it's magnificent. You should see it. And I can see how if you didn't, there might be issues with which fluid goes in which pump. So I'm going to go with C.
You're right. That's what happened. And by the way, you were right. What happened was is the fuel got into the line that they use for recycling the water for their next training exercise, and boom.
That is rough.
Yeah, went viral on Twitter. All right, very good. North Bend's true claim to fame is that it was the setting for David Lynch's TV series Twin Peaks. During the filming of the original show back in the late 80s and 90s, one of the producers got an excited call telling him what? A, the National Apple Growers Association was offering a cool million to switch Agent Cooper's favorite kind of pie. B, Jerry Falwell had announced that the title Twin Peaks was too salacious for today's youth. Or C, Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev had to know who the murderer was right away.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Gorbachev. It was a really suspenseful show. I could see I'm thinking.
Is there such a thing as too smart? Because you're right again, that's what happened.
Oh my God.
The call to the producer came from a financier who had heard from his friend, President George H.W. Bush, that Mikhail Gorbachev had to know the solution to the mystery right away. It is unclear, though, if Gorbachev got his answer. Last question. North Bend is home to Nintendo's main factory and distribution center, and Nintendo director Shigeru Miyamoto has spent time in this town where people have observed him pursuing his favorite hobby. What is it? A, leaping on mushrooms, hoping that one day he'll be launched into the air. B, pulling out a tape measure and measuring everything he comes across. Or C, finding kids playing a Nintendo DS, taking it, and immediately beating their high score.
I'm going to go with B, the tape measure. Sounds like just the kind of hobby that a great video game designer would have.
You're right again.
Oh!
Wow. Very well done.
He's obsessed, Mr. Miyamoto, he's obsessed with measuring things. He likes to guess their size and then pull out his tape measure and measure it. That's what he does for fun. Bill, how did Mayor Pete Buttigieg do on our show?
With those three right answers, I smell re-election.
There you are. Yeah. Pete Buttigieg is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Mayor Pete, thank you so much for joining us.
Sometimes the antidote for living in a really dumb time is to talk to really smart people, which we did in February when we interviewed Dr. Michael Rosbesch, winner of the 2017 Nobel Prize in Medicine. And Peter got right to the point.
Was it exciting to win the same prize that Bob Dylan won?
It was. We sang four of his songs at the ceremony, the three of us.
Did you really? Because Dylan himself wouldn't show up, you guys had to do it? So first I want to check, did I describe, broadly speaking, your Nobel Prize winning discovery correctly? It's about the biological clock, right?
Good enough. Yep, you did.
All right. Thank you. I would get a decent grade in your class at Brandeis?
Grade inflation notwithstanding, you'd get a B-.
All right. Thank you for being honest. Now, I understand that you did your research into biological clocks with fruit flies.
We do. This is the fifth Nobel Prize for fruit flies, by the way, in the history of the Nobel Prize.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Does the metal kind of weigh on their little necks?
It doesn't seem fair when you think about it that you guys get the medals and they do all the work.
We said the day we won, there were three of us, of course, not just me, that it was a great day for the fruit fly.
Yeah. Do you? I've always wondered about this because so many scientists work with fruit flies because they reproduce quickly and the genome is known, right? Do you ever get, like, attached to the little guys?
Absolutely. My partner at Brandeis, the guy I collaborated with for 20 years, he would come in every morning, turn the lights on in his lab, and he'd say to all the bottles of fruit flies, "Hello, boys, did you miss me?"
I read that in regard to your work on the biological clock, that, and I love this because it's such a cliche of, like, the mad scientist, that nobody thought that your research into this area would actually bear any fruit, as it were. Sorry.
Right, that we were taking a flyer. That's
yes. Did they tell you to buzz off, Professor?
Somebody needs to do research into why people react so violently over a pun.
Yeah.
But, you know, in my biology class in high school, and I'm not suggesting it was in any way the same thing, sir, but they were in a test tube when we put them to sleep all the time with, like, ether or something.
No, we do that too.
Yeah, really? Well then how do you tell when they sleep regularly?
If you you don't use the ether.
Wow.
That's how he got a Nobel Prize. Yeah. No, actually, so, I mean, that does occur to me.
To be serious just for a moment, the remarkable thing is we were working in fruit flies, and it turned out that other people, after we started, found out that exactly the same proteins and mechanism operates in humans.
Wow. So does that mean that fruit flies sleep like humans?
Yes, they also sleep like humans. I mean, they're our cousins. That's why...
They are not!
What school do you work at again? That's ridiculous. Oh, yeah. Boy, there's...
I was going to say, except for a few people for whom they're their sibling.
Yeah.
Boy, that's an awkward family reunion when you're having a picnic outside and you swat your cousin. Oh, yeah. Jesus. Sorry.
Let's talk about actually getting the Nobel Prize. I assume it works. I've heard you get a phone call from out of nowhere. Is that how it works?
Out of nowhere at 5:10 in the morning East Coast time, exactly.
Well, I was wondering about this because, you know, you work in science. You've been working in science for a long time. You've gotten recognition for your work. So isn't it true that deep inside you would know that if the phone rang really early in the morning before a reasonable hour, it was either a terrible tragedy had happened somewhere or it was a Nobel Prize?
That's absolutely true, and both thoughts went through my mind. And there were two others. One that it was a prank.
Yeah.
You know, from one of my dear friends. And the fourth, of course, was that as the gentleman with the Swedish accent started to talk, I thought maybe this is going to be like La La Land, you know, and they're going to get halfway through the announcement and say, "Oops, wrong envelope."
Oh, yeah. And they actually give the Nobel Prize to Moonlight. Really? Yeah. So, I mean, did you say, are you serious? Is this real? Did you like?
I said, "You're kidding me." And then my wife said to me, "Start breathing, please. You're white as a sheet."
Did your friends treat you any differently? Because this must be a big deal. Not every scientist gets this.
No, my friends treated me exactly the same, but a lot of other people treated me differently. I will say that.
Really?
And it's actually remarkable. In Sweden, we're absolute rock stars. You thought you were Mick Jagger.
Oh, that's so great.
Really?
It's amazing. And not just scientists, from everybody. People came out of the kitchen at a restaurant, you know, they want to take pictures.
So. Oh, wow. When you say you're like Mick Jagger, were there Nobel groupies?
We were surrounded.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Well, Dr. Rosbash, we are delighted to talk to you about fruit flies or anything else, but in fact, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Wait, is it last call already?
That was terrifying. So as we have discussed, you work with fruit flies all day, so we thought we'd ask you three questions about another kind of fly, bar flies. Answer two questions about people who never leave the bar stool, and you'll win a prize even more valuable than a Nobel for one of our listeners, the voice of anyone they like on their voicemail. Bill, who is Dr. Rosbash playing for?
Taylor Chin of Boise, Idaho.
Okay. You ready to do this?
I'm ready.
All right. First question. Famous barfly Jack Kerouac once went on a bender with some big consequences. What? A, in what is believed to be the first drunk dial in history, he called Allen Ginsberg, and they talked for 14 hours straight. B, he got so drunk he enlisted in the Army, Navy, Marines, and the Coast Guard all in the same day. Or C, he drove off the road.
I have this vague recollection of A.
That he, like, did a drunk dial and called Allen Ginsberg and talked for 14 hours? No, I'm afraid it was actually the second one. He enlisted in every branch of the armed forces.
Wow.
I guess he couldn't decide, so why not all? He actually showed up for Coast Guard duty. There's no record of him actually showing up for any others. All right, you still have two more chances here. The most famous barflies of the modern era are the fictional ones in the TV show Cheers that ran on NBC for 11 years, huge hit. How did the cast and crew celebrate the airing of the show's final episode? A, they aired a real live Alcoholics Anonymous meeting immediately after the show to make amends. B, they got really drunk and then they all appeared live in The Tonight Show. Or C, they had a screening for the cast and crew of the final episode of Mama's Family, which they said they preferred to their own show.
I'll go with B.
You're right. They all got really drunk
I remember that.
At a party. at the bar in Boston that inspired the locale, and then they all went on the Tonight Show and apparently misbehaved terribly.
Oh, that sounds
so fun. Yeah. All right, you're doing very well here. This is your last question. You get this right, you win for your listener. One of the most famous literary barflies was, of course, Ernest Hemingway. In fact, he loved one bar he frequented in Key West so much he did what? A, set up a bedroom in the back room so he never had to go home. B, stole a urinal and installed it in his house. Or C, married three of their waitresses in succession.
Let's do A.
You're going to say A, that he set a bedroom in the back room so he never had to go home?
No. B.
B, that's he stole.
There's the scientific process at work.
So that he stole a urinal from the bar. He loved it so much.
Yes.
That's right. That's what he did. Apparently the bar was being demolished, and Hemingway said, I have basically poured so much money indirectly into that urinal, I own it. And he took it, and you can still see it, I am told, in the garden of the Hemingway House in Key West, if you're inclined to do so. Bill, how did Dr. Michael Rosbach do in our quiz?
The doctor squeaked out a win, and you earned that Nobel Prize, doctor.
Yes, he did. Wasn't certain until now. Dr. Michael Rosbach is a winner of the 2017 Nobel Prize in Medicine. Dr. Rosbach, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell. When we come back, a hockey legend and a weather legend. It's legends all the way down. That's coming up in a minute on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Goldman Sachs, presenting Talks at GS, Goldman Sachs' interview show that convenes leading thinkers to share insights and ideas shaping the world. Recent episodes featured Disney's Bob Iger, journalist Katie Couric, and GM's Mary Barra. That's Talks at GS, available on Hulu, Amazon Prime, Yahoo Finance, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at gs.com.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. We're getting a little head start on things and doing our year-end special today in August. It's a year we wish would end special.
Last summer, we went to Philadelphia and their beautiful outdoor venue, the Mann Center. While there, we interviewed a local hero and a hockey legend.
I'm going to say, I don't like to comment on people's physical appearance, but you are a much more handsome man than I would expect from a guy who had a career as a hockey goalie.
I was hoping you'd say that. Yes. Yeah, thank you.
I was particularly admiring your full set of teeth.
Yeah. Well, by the way, it cost me about $40,000.
I understand. Right. Yeah. Now, you are a Quebecois, right? You're from Montreal?
Yes, from Montreal.
Right. And you came down to play hockey in America at a pretty young age, right?
In 1967, quickly. Yeah. First of all, before this, I had played 2 years for Boston. There were only six teams in the league. Don't hold this against me now.
Yeah.
But now the expansion came in 67, and I was up in Montreal hitting some golf balls, and a friend of mine comes up to me and says, hey, you got drafted. I said, Billy, by whom? He said, Philadelphia. At the time, I said, where's Philly at?
Really?
Yeah. And then they put us on the float. 24 players got drafted.
Yeah.
And we went through Broad Street to introduce us to the
city. Right down the center of Philadelphia.
And we had more people on the float than we had watching us. But, you know, it's a good story because 7 years later, we won the Stanley Cup and we had 2 million people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were, You are acclaimed, and that's why you're in the Hall of Fame, as being one of the greatest goalies of all time. What is the secret to being a great hockey goalie?
Have a good team in front of you.
Really? I've always wondered, is that terrifying to be there knowing that that puck could be flying at your head at 100 miles an hour at any moment?
It does. But, you know, when you're playing the game and you're performing in front of 20, 22,000 people, you know, at that age, plus your mid-20s, late-20s, you don't think about this. You just
really?
Go out and challenge. Yeah.
Really?
There's no fear.
Oh, hang on.
I was wondering if the people in back can see the flash from both rings.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go, folks.
So where you got...
They must be so heavy.
By the way, I have a little story about the rings.
Please, let me say that, of course, Bernie is wearing his two championship rings. That was Stanley Cup, 73 and 74. Right?
74, 75.
74, excuse me.
Yeah.
One in each hand. So
yes.
Tell me the story.
The story is I was upstate New York signing autographs a session, and this beautiful young lady, about 17 years old, comes up to me. She said, can I have a picture for my brother? I said, sure. I'm signing, she says, championship ring? Yep. And then we have our names on this, right? Perrant, but she had no clue. 17-year-old kid, she looks at the name, she goes, man, this is cool. You know, 17-year-old kid. I said, what is it so cool about it? She said, they even made one for their parents, too.
Yeah.
That brings you down.
Yeah, you must have been very proud of your son, I guess. Yeah. Hey, we have always heard that part of the tradition of the Stanley Cup is that every player on the winning team gets to take the actual Stanley Cup, the trophy, home for like a day.
Yeah.
What did you do with your day?
Put mine in the swimming pool.
You what?
In the swimming pool in the deep end. So people had to dive in and kiss the cup, right?
Wait a minute.
Yeah, it was fine until about 2 in the morning. Then it got dangerous.
You can only keep that up for 8 or 9 hours before someone's going to get hurt.
Lord.
Yeah. And then the Stanley, the people like the National Hockey League didn't get mad at you for doing that?
If they get mad, it's their problem.
There you go. Yeah.
I think there's been worse things than that.
Yeah, sure. And that is a Philadelphia attitude.
Definitely.
Yeah. It occurs to me, speaking of Philadelphia, this is where, did you learn English here when you came here? You were a French speaker, originally, of course, you still are. But
just when I got drafted again with Boston, I was 17, I had to go to Niagara Falls, Ontario. And I couldn't speak English. I picked up my suitcase and went to Niagara Falls. It was scary.
Yeah.
But listen, when you're hungry, you learn how to speak a language.
Yeah, yeah. Je voudrais un cheese steak.
That was good.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, Bernie Perrant, it is a pleasure to talk to you, an honor to meet you, but we have asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
It's your turn to figure out what the hell icing is.
So... Icing is this rule in hockey that no one outside of hockey understands. We're confident several NHL players probably don't get it either. So we're going to ask you three questions about the other kind of icing, the kind you find on a cake. Answer 2 out of 3 questions right, you will win our prize for one of our listeners, the voice of Carl Castle on their voicemail. Bill, who is Bernie Perrant playing for?
Lauren Spivak of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Must be a fan. You're going to be good at this. 3 questions, 3 periods, you know.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So the first question. One of the best uses of icing we know about is German chocolate cake. Which of these is a true interesting fact about German chocolate cake? A, it was once used to smuggle a nail file into Rikers Island, but the recipient was so excited about German chocolate cake that he swallowed it. B, after a salmonella outbreak in 1956, it was commonly referred to as a while as Germy chocolate cake. Or C, it has nothing to do with Germany. It was named after a man who was named Sam German.
Really?
Yeah, well.
Next question, please.
Nice block, I
nice
guess.
Nice block, yeah. I'll take the third answer.
Well, that's the right one.
Ah, oh, how about this?
What was that?
There was a guy in the 19th century who invented a baking bar called German chocolate bar, and that became German chocolate cake, and now it's German chocolate cake. There you go. Next question. Legendary baseball player Sparky Lyle used to love to prank his teammates whenever it was their birthday, and icing played a role. What did he do? A, he stole their glove and baked it into their birthday cake. B, quote, chewing tobacco flavored icing. Or C, he would sneak into the locker room and put his butt print in the cake.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. How about the third one?
Yes, you know, athletes. Just, you know, I'm sure you know professional athletes. Is he more likely to take the time to bake a cake or just sit on one? And you were right. That was the answer.
And what kind of impression did it leave?
It left.
A deep one.
A shapely one.
Yeah. Crappy.
Last question. Unsurprisingly, there is a Trump administration scandal involving a cake. Is it A, the president sent a giant birthday cake to Vladimir Putin? B, the president plagiarized his inauguration cake design from President Obama? Or C, the president just recently slashed apart his 72nd birthday cake looking for the girl he expected to jump out of it?
Knowing Trump, I take the third one.
What about you? Actually, I like that you picked that, so I'm just going to let you go with that. But it was actually two, the second one. The Trump inaugural committee, instead of having their own cake design, just went to a baker with a photo of Obama's inaugural cake and said, we want that. Bill, how did Bernie Parent do in our quiz?
Well, let's call it three.
Yeah, I know.
Out of three doesn't make any difference.
Bernie Parent is a two-time Stanley Cup winner. You can find more on the Flyers website, BernieParent.com. Bernie Parent, thank you so much.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Let's end the show with a chat with one of the most beloved people in America, a weatherman who never actually was trained in the weather. It's Al Roker.
Peter, ask him if he ever found it hard to be cheerful every morning for a national audience.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny you said this because it was about 6 months ago, and my daughter, just her room was a mess, and I just let loose on her. I mean, I just like, this place is a pigsty, it's a mess, and all of a sudden she burst into tears, and she goes, this isn't fair. America gets to see happy Al Roker.
That cuts to the bone. Oh, my God.
You know, although I'm maybe different than much of America, but I don't want cheery when I turn on morning television or morning radio. No, I want them to be about where I am. You know, you guys, to do a morning broadcast, you get up at like 2 or 3 in the morning, right? So by the time it's on the air, you guys are already fired up and going.
Right.
I want you to be like, all right, let's check the weather. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you obviously haven't seen Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
All right, I have a... This is way probably too inside, but I have a question. I've always wanted to ask you this, Al.
Yes.
Are you aware that when you say on the Today Show, when you say, that's what's happening nationwide, whatever, here's what's happening in your neck of the woods.
Yes.
And you throw to the local person.
Right.
And I travel a lot, and wherever you are, and it could be like Grand Forks, North Dakota, there'll be like a 25-year-old weatherman who will then go, thanks, Al, in a really super familiar way.
Yes.
And sometimes I get really annoyed, and I yell at the TV, and I say, you don't know Al. Why are you acting like your best friends? They're like...
So, Al Roker, would you like to tell the weather people of America that you're not actually their friend?
I am their friend.
You are their friend.
I am their friend.
But you know that they do that, don't you?
But it doesn't bother me. It's okay. It really isn't. If that's something that's going to bother me, it's time for me to get out of this business.
Yeah.
I think they should say, thanks, Al. I hope to one day meet you. Here's what's happening in Grand Forks. Or thanks, Mr. Roker.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Roker, for wherever you are.
Yeah.
So, Al, you're not just an anchor. You are also a writer and a chef. In fact, one of your novels is going to be on TV in a film adaptation, right?
Yeah, that's right. On Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. It's Al Roker's morning show mystery, Mortal Mishaps, and Holly Robinson Pete plays Billy Blessings, and she's a morning show co-host and a chef, and her executive producer is poisoned by a cake that she baked, and all fingers point to her, and she's got to prove herself innocent.
So wait, that's boring in comparison with what's actually happening.
Yeah.
So my executive producer.
You, as many people may know, are a morning TV show co-host who is also an acclaimed amateur chef.
Yes.
And you have written a book in which your character, a TV co-host and chef, is accused of murdering her own executive producer.
Yes.
And the executive producer of the Today Show thought what of this book?
Well, I don't know. He died before he told me.
Yeah. Well, Al Roker, you... This is like not a surprise to the entire nation, but you're delightful to talk to.
Well, thank you.
And we would love to talk to you all day, but in fact, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
We Were All Yellow.
So, Al Roker, we were thinking you know your way around a cold front and a cold snap, but what do you know about Coldplay?
Oh.
The British band that was founded 20 years ago this very week. So we're going to ask you three questions about the band Chris Martin used to escape from Gwyneth Paltrow for a few hours most days. Get two right and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Bill, who is Al Roker playing for?
Sarah Anderson of Salt Lake City, Utah.
All right. First question. Coldplay, apparently the band, the music, can have strong effects on the people who hear it, as in which of these real-life cases? A, in 2007, a Seattle woman was arrested for attacking a guy who was singing a Coldplay song at karaoke just to make him stop. B, their hit song Fix You caused a worldwide uptick in therapist appointments in 2005. Or C, lead singer Chris Martin was credited for inspiring the trend of men looking like they haven't shaved for exactly 3 days.
I'm going to go with A.
And you'd be right, Al. It was a karaoke thing. Woman attacked this guy to stop him from singing a Coldplay song, and if you guessed the song was Yellow, you would be right.
Aha.
Next question, Al. The band's name, Coldplay, has an unusual origin story. What is it? A, it's a reference to Chris Martin's boyhood refuge, a walk-in refrigerator. B, the band met at a basement theater production of Our Town where the furnace did not work. Or C, there was another band named Coldplay, but they thought it was too depressing a name, so they gave it away to Chris Martin.
I'm going to go with C.
And Al, once again, you are correct.
Wow!
That's what happened. Another band got another guy, named his band Coldplay, and then he said, that's too dark and depressing. And
why is that dark and depressing?
He just thought it was. He ended up, that guy, naming his band Keen for some reason.
That worked out well for him.
It did.
Yeah.
So here's your last question to see if you can be perfect at this. We have to talk about, of course, Gwyneth Paltrow, who was married to the lead singer Chris Martin for a while. She gets a lot of headlines, more than he does, for her lifestyle advice. Which of these is something that Gwyneth Paltrow has really told people to do? A, be nice to water because it has feelings. B, get stung by bees on purpose. Or C, take medical advice from a ghost.
I'm going with B.
You're going to go with which?
B.
Yet, in fact, B is correct, but so is A and C. She has done all of those.
Oh, that's Gwyneth.
She's amazing. Bill, how did Al Roker do in our quiz?
In his neck of the woods, he got them all right.
Excellent, excellent.
Good going, Al.
Thank you.
I want to thank him at the end.
You do?
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, all right. So here we go. So Mo has asked if he can thank Al Roker, so I'm going to do the outro and then you take it over. Okay ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. So Al Roker is a co-anchor on NBC's Today Show. Al Roker, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, wait, you're going to do that.
Thanks, Al.
Al Roker, thank you so much.
I hate when you let people do that.
Bye-bye. That's it for our Is It Over Yet edition. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our intern is Zoe Zeidema. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Jennifer Mills, Miles Dornbos, and Lillian King. Special thanks to Odinaka Iziokoli. Technical directions from Lorna White. Our master of operations is Colin Miller. Public address announcer is Paul Friedman. Peter Gwynn is Gwyntastic. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Thanks to Bill Curtis, all our panelists and guests, and their pets. And of course, Mr. Carl Castle. We'll be back with you with an all-new show next week. This is NPR.